glad to see you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good to hear your voice.
Hi, everybody.
Good morning.
So, okay, hi. The theme for the month of October is deep listening. The call to worship this morning comes from my colleague that serves in Vermont, Joan Javier Duval. And I'll read it along with our worship associate, Cheryl Guy. You are beloved and you are welcome here.
Whether tears have fallen from your eyes this past week, or gleeful laughter has spilled out of your smiling mouth.
You are beloved and you are welcome here.
Whether you are feeling brave or brokenhearted, defiant or defeated, fearsome or fearful.
You are beloved and you are welcome here.
Whether you have untold stories buried deep inside, or stories that have been forced beyond the edges of comfort.
You are beloved, and you are welcome here.
Whether you have made promises, broken promises, or are renewing your promises.
You are beloved, and you are welcome here.
Whatever is on your heart, however it is with your soul in this moment.
You are beloved and you are welcome here.
In this space of welcome and acceptance, commitment and recommitment, of covenant and connection.
Let us worship together. We acknowledge that the land we gather on as a congregation, where we live, work, and play, was not freely given to us. We are gathered on the ancestral land of the Nuchu, Ute, Apache, the Pueblos, Hopi, Zuni, and Diné nations. This was also a site of trade, gathering, and healing for other native tribes. We recognize the indigenous peoples as original stewards of this land. As these words are spoken and heard, the ties nations have to their ancestral homelands are renewed and reaffirmed. We acknowledge that our use of and benefit from this land came at a dire cost to Native nations and peoples whose land we now inhabit. I am Katie Kandarian Morris, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Durango. I am so grateful to be creating community with this congregation full of beautiful, caring, and justice-filled people. In these tender times in which we are experiencing trauma and confusion, yet continue acting for a more just world, it is a balm being together, responding to the world's heartache with our liberal religious values. As Unitarian Universalists, we celebrate our radical roots and history as self-motivated spiritual people who think for ourselves, and recognize that personal experience influences our beliefs more than anything. As we worship, shaping things of worth, we create community, offering opportunities for transformation. Let us be reminded of the many ways that may happen. Let's continue now. And in the place of our prayer today, let us instead meditate and reflect on these words that come from the Reverend Alicia Ford, who is the UUA Director of the International Office. Alicia is also a resident of Longmont, Colorado. And these words are her reflection. Am I a guest here? Here in this house? Are you? Are we guests here? Here in this house? And whose house do we inhabit? In the small world of our lives, the borders between us, easements, fences, gates, hedges, serve to delineate, to separate us, to remind us where my property begins and ends, where your property begins and ends. If you cross over, you are a trespasser or a guest in my house. You've worked to own this small plot of land and the house erected on it. You've claimed it. It is now a part of your self, your definition of self, your identity. If I cross over your fences, I am a trespasser or a guest in your house. What does it mean then that in 1845, the United States crossed over into Mexico and took half of that country, took land, resources, labor? Was the U.S. a trespasser? Guest? Are there to be no consequences for taking what does not belong to you? Should we simply forget whose house we inhabit? To speak of hospitality and immigration often erases historical context. The actions of the past that have led us step by step into this current predicament. Professor Miguel de la Torre writes, "Perhaps it might be more accurate to speak of the responsibility of restitution rather than the virtue of hospitality." Hospitality in this case applies that the house belongs to us, that the land, the resources that are a part of this house is ours, and we who now live here are being virtuous in our willingness to share. It erases the history that would have us remember that those who cross the border today, those choosing to brave the harsh conditions of the desert, those who face the possibility of death, imprisonment, deportation, criminalization, are doing so because the U.S. once crossed their borders to extract their resources and labor. It is for them a matter of survival. It is for the U.S. a matter of restitution. The prospect of restitution is scary. Where do we begin? With Mexico? With Native Americans? With territories? With the descendants of those who were enslaved? How do we acknowledge and address the complexities of our history, present, and, if we're not conscious, future of dominance? What would right relationship look like? What conditions and considerations would make restitution possible? And for us, Unitarian Universalists, what would it mean for us to shake off the idea of hospitality as a central principle that is often attached to immigration and delve into the concept of restitution? Whose house do we inhabit? For we are not hosts, we are not owners, nor are we guests. What then is our responsibility? Let us hold silence for just a moment. May it be so. Amen. Ashe. Amen. Blessed be. Thank you. There's a podcast called All My Relations. It's hosted by Matika Wilbur, Swinomish and Tulalip, and Adrienne Keene, Cherokee Nation, exploring our relationships to land, to our creatural relatives, and to one another. The two podcast leaders recently did a series of three episodes focusing on the relationship building practice of purchasing art directly from Native artists. The leaders who live in the Northeast make an annual trip to the Santa Fe Indian Art Market, which because of the pandemic was closed. So one of their goals was to introduce their listeners, their podcast listeners, to actual Native artists rather than to purchase from what they call Native-inspired junk. Secondly, the pandemic has hit us all in a lot of different and difficult ways. But when the Native art world is so dependent on in-person relationships, this time has meant that things have had to dramatically shift and change in a very short period of time. Many of our artist friends, say the podcast leaders, rely on art markets and show for the majority of their income each year. And all of these shows and markets have been canceled. Well, I want to recommend this podcast to you called All My Relations so that you might add that for your listening. But I want to do something similar right here, right now, during this worship. I would like to showcase some connected folks who are just getting started. You may remember Kayla Shaggy from her visit to our sanctuary last fall. She graduated then from Fort Lewis College last year, and she brought one friend and will give us information about her art, all three arts. So one artist couldn't be with us today, and Kayla will tell about her art. And then AJ, and now I practiced the pronunciation, Nikwachiwa, and then our other guests besides Kayla Shaggy and AJ will be Kamala Mannheimer. And I want to welcome them here to UUFD because it is an opportunity to build relationship and to provide learning opportunities for us. Remember, our theme for the month of October is deep listening. And I think the idea of listening is not simply about listening with our ears, but taking in, considering, imagining, and hearing. So welcome, Kayla.
Hey, so it's great to meet you all. Thank you. My name is Kayla Shaggy. I am a Diné Anishinaabe artist, and a lot of my work focuses on emotional and psychological contexts. And I take a lot of inspiration from my tribal background as well. And what I'm most known for in my art is the mark making and detailing. And I also do illustrations, paintings, you know, and my comic book series, The Sixth World, which can be found at Maria's Bookstore. And it's all about indigenous futurisms. So yeah, and then in the chat below, you can see my website. It has all of my art. And so I do a lot of different mediums. My intention with my art is to create positive Indigenous representation and to show, you know, that Indigenous art can be a variety of genres and a variety of mediums that we're not limited. And it's for a wide audience too, Indigenous and non-Indigenous. So I really like to do mark making, which is kind of like a focus on line work, pencil work, pen work. My intention with my artwork is to kind of evoke a strong emotional response and kind of, you know, even if people don't know what the image may be conveying specifically, I would like the art to evoke something within the viewer. And I feel like each viewer can come up with something different.
Kayla, what if we invite people to maybe ask a question in the chat, since we could have another, you know, just we'll take like one or two questions before we move on to AJ.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
Does anybody have anything that they'd like to ask? You can just type it in the chat. And the other thing is, if you're still thinking about it, we could go to AJ and then come back afterwards. Oh, here we go. Here's a question for you, Kayla. Where and how would we purchase your work? What's the best place?
The best place to do it would be on my website. That's in the chat right now, the kaylashaggy.gallery. You would go to the website and there should be like a tab that says store, and then I have a store with all sorts of stuff.
And one more question. Who are your native artist inspirations?
I would have to say Fritz Schulder. I forgot which tribe he's from, but he's considered a indigenous modern artist. He kind of got his start within the 60s, but he's known for his unnatural color palette and kind of social commentary within his works. And, you know, the first time I saw it, I was just so like, whoa, you know, it was very emotional seeing his works, and I could really connect to it. So I hope to do that within my own work.
And finally, one more question. What age group are your graphic novels geared towards?
I would say they're good for adults and kids. I've heard a lot of kids really like the book, which is good, because I was originally intending it to be for kind of like middle schoolers and then up. So I would say they're for everyone.
Thanks, Kayla. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you.
And AJ, welcome.
Thank you.
Before AJ starts, I'm wearing a pair of AJ's earrings, if you can see me here. And they look like they're simply at, whoops, this one's shows the back. So there, they look like they are simply a design. But AJ, could you say more?
Yes, I can. So if you all can see behind me here, I have another piece that's a little similar. This is one of my first mediums that I've worked in. It is actually the sash belt designs that the Pueblos and Navajos wear. I also weave those, and so I work very much with the geometric designs. And those were the first designs that I was familiar with and confident enough to put onto my painted jewelry that I started about 3 years ago. And so I believe the pair Katie's wearing were purchased almost 3 years ago from the very beginning. And so these are some of my original works, probably one of the first 20 pairs I ever made of that. And they are painted parfletch, so rawhide pieces, painted with acrylic paints and sealed with fixative. And they are all faceted on sterling silver or gold hooks. So everything is hypoallergenic, and I'm able to switch out the hooks if anyone ever needs that to be done as well. But I also have some other examples of the painted parfletch that I've been doing. So I have really utilized the parfletch as a canvas, since that is my, I guess my original medium that I first started working with was 2D, sketching, painting, and drawing. And so I've really incorporated that into what I do now. So I've started making illustrations on the earrings. So here is an example. It's a painted bowl of ramen with eggs and a Naruto, pork slices, seaweed, and bamboo shoots all in a bowl. And this earring is about 2.5 inches in diameter. And so this is what I've been exploring a lot lately. In my work, I am working to break down boundaries that have been set up for Indigenous artists ever since we began in the art world. So if you'd like, I can go into a little bit of a background on how I started to do my jewelry and what my inspirations are.
Please do, AJ.
No problem. And so, as I was saying, you know, my first medium was 2D. My mother and my father were both artists, as are multiple generations of my family. Prior to my great uncle, they weren't referred to as artists. They were just craftsmen, you know. In the village, they were the people who made the moccasins, they made the baskets, they made the sash belts, they made the dresses and things like that. And we didn't refer to them as arts. They were, you know, utilitarian pieces at the time. But in, I believe, the 60s or 50s is when my great uncle Charles Lolama began his work. And he, again, is probably my ultimate inspiration. I owe a lot of what I know and my ability to him, and I'm so fortunate for that. But he inspires me by the way that he also wanted to break down boundaries that were set up, because he started his jewelry, and him as a person enjoyed very fine and on the more expensive end of materials. So when he first started, he wanted to work in Afghani lapis and, you know, gold and diamonds and things like that. And he made his work, and it was nothing like anyone was producing. And at the time, I would say a lot of the work that was being produced was the Southwest silversmithing style. So like the squash blossoms and the stamped work and things. And he himself didn't make anything like that. He went off in a whole different direction. I believe he started with lost wax casts and cast really semi-precious stones in those. And when he first took his work to a juried competition, I believe it was the Gallup Ceremonial. I don't remember the year, but he took his work there, entered it in, and did not receive a prize or didn't place. And he asked one of the judges why that was, and they told him, oh, your work is not Indian art. You are not producing Indian art. And he told them, well, I'm an Indian. How is it not Indian art? How is it not native art if it's coming from my hands? And they just could not fathom what he was asking them. They just kept on their, you know, dug their toes in and told him, your art is not native. It is not Indian art. And so it's not what we, you know, it's not what we judge here. And so that really motivated him to find an audience for his work. And so he broke out of just trying to sell to other Native Americans and went out and found clients in New York and LA and other places like that. And his work started to take off, but he had to really work for that. And he had to not allow what those critics were saying to really stop him from doing what he wanted to do. He wasn't going to produce what was expected of him. And that's kind of what I'm doing as well. I'm not doing what's expected of me. I like breaking barriers in multiple ways. I enjoy learning multiple mediums and matching them together in ways that you think would not be possible. And I myself, just as an artisan, enjoy learning cultural arts and cultural techniques and ancestral techniques, especially because I know the importance of that information to be carried on. And even if I don't utilize it or, you know, make a living from it, I have that information to pass on. And that's the most important thing to me, is this information is passed on, is recorded and transmitted either through me or through a conduit that I have presented. And so I very much like to promote to the youth participation in the arts, mainly because I know that it has helped me explore my own growing as a person. It has helped me express my creativity, my aggressions, and other things. It is a great place for especially Indigenous youth to work because our minds are so creative, and the things that they are able to produce is something that prior generations did not have the technology to do so. And with the technology that we have now, we can do so many things, but we need to not limit ourselves to thinking this is not Indian art. That's a lot of what I get. One of the first juried competitions I ever went to, I took my pieces there, and it was something different. And again, they said the same thing to me. They told me, you didn't place because this isn't what we're looking for. This isn't quite like the art that we judge. And I told them, that's fine. I'm going to keep going. And that was probably 6 or 8 years ago that happened. And I've been making my own art now for 3 years consistently at least. But I've grown to make multiple mediums at the moment. So right now I currently work mainly in Parfletch, the painted earrings, and then the dentalium earrings, silver work, and ribbon skirts. So an example of a ribbon skirt that I've made is this one here. So
it's beautiful.
Thank you. This was actually taught to me by Majel Boxer, Dr. Boxer, up there at Fort Lewis. She is the one who presented this information to me.
It's lovely. AJ, you might want to answer some questions that come up. Just go ahead and respond to them in the chat. And yeah, no problem. I want to make sure we have time to recognize the work of Kamala Mannheimer, who's not able to be here. And we're going to just show you a slide of hers. And Kayla's going to also give us her artist statement as well.
Okay.
Thanks, AJ.
No problem.
Hello. So Kamala, unfortunately, couldn't be here today, but I'll be saying her statement. So Kamala Mannheimer, she's a Dinette artist. She is originally from Kayenta, Arizona. She is also a Fort Lewis College student. She's been drawing her whole life, and she takes inspiration from Japanese pop culture and botany. Watercolor is her favorite medium. She has also experimented with graphite, acrylics, gouache, pastels, ink, and has recently started doing digital drawing. Her hobbies include drawing, hiking, baking, and pressing plants. And for the pieces that are being shown on the screen, her inspiration for them came from female Dinette clothing. She used her own traditional attire as a reference. Each article of clothing holds a story that came from our own significant life events.
Wonderful. And you're featuring her on your website, right?
Yeah, as a guest artist.
I'm so grateful that you could both be here today and that we're able to see in this way these three wonderful artists and their work and hear their statements and some of the understanding of their stories. There is more Native art on display right now at the Center for Southwest Studies on the Fort Lewis College campus. The featured exhibit that is there right now is called Pivot, all capital letters, curated by Dwayne Koyawena Hopi and Landis Bahi Dine. Features original works on a unique canvas where all these art pieces that we're talking about today are somehow unique. and for this exhibit that you can go see in person if you go, if you first make an appointment online. This exhibition reflects our lives, unique yet universal. Pivot refers to the quick transitions we make between our traditional and day-to-day lives. We often work in cities while continuing to contribute to our ancestral communities and homelands. And what the canvas is, are skateboard decks. In other words, the part that the skateboard rider would stand on. When you pick it up, underneath the portion there is a gorgeous piece of wood. You can look at some of them that are displayed on the South Center for Southwest Studies website, or you can go there and see them in person right now. Or one final thing, you can stay on your sofa and purchase the fall 2020 edition of the photography magazine Aperture. And this particular edition is called Native America. It's a special issue about photography and Indigenous lives. And it's guest edited by the artist Wendy Redstar. It's a beautiful compilation that can sit on your coffee table and be picked up for deep listening. Tomorrow, October 12th, is Indigenous Peoples Day, as it is officially recognized by the city of Durango, inspired to do so by then Fort Lewis student Ruthie Ed. Since 2016, when that was first acknowledged by this city, when Durango became acknowledged Indigenous Peoples Day, a number of other cities and municipalities have followed suit. May the day soon arrive in which this recognition leads the way, making more changes that repair and recognize, respect and listen, and that teach us more lessons. May it be so. Amen. Ashe. Blessed be.